Welcome to the Fansmanship.com podcast, coming to you from San Luis Obispo, California.
Welcome to Fansmanship.com podcast, episode 89. Today I am thrilled to be joined by national baseball writer. He writes for Baseball America. His name is Aaron Fitt. Aaron, how's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
Great, thanks. I'm doing well, too. I think all of San Luis Obispo, I think, at this point is doing pretty well, at least if you're a baseball fan. Cal Poly's gotten off to a tremendous start this year. They're 8-2. They've won series against Kansas State and UCLA. They just split a doubleheader because of the rain against USC this past week. They are ranked number nine and by Perfect Game USA and number 11 by Aaron's Baseball America. And I wanted to talk to him a little bit about college baseball so far this year. Aaron, I know that you've been to a lot of games out in the Carolinas, and this past week I saw a really great question that you got on one of your chats that you do. It was about preseason rankings bias, and I wanted to start there because I thought you really eloquently answered it in your chat. The question was something about if you throw out preseason rankings bias, who's done the best so far this year? And your response was really good as far as rejecting the premise to that question and talking about a little bit of a sliding scale that you have to have throughout the year. Can you go through that concept for me?
Yeah, sure. You know, when we rank our teams in the preseason, it's, you know, it's not a process that we take lightly. I mean, it takes a lot of research, and you know, really, it starts really. The foundation for all this stuff goes back to the draft, and you know, when we're making calls about high school players, you know, that gives us kind of a background about players that are going to be in college baseball. And then over the course of a fall, you know, you make all these calls to coaches and scouts, trying to work on recruiting class rankings and get a feel for all who the new players are and what they can do. And over the fall, you know, we make a lot of calls. They're trying to get a feel for, you know, how each team is constructed. And so, you know, when we go into a season, we have a certain idea of which teams we like and which teams we have questions about. And then, you know, the longer the season goes on, the more you learn and you find out where you were right and where you were wrong in the preseason. And certainly we're not right all the time, but, you know, you got a pretty good foundation of knowledge heading into the season. And so, of course, before there's been a game played, the rankings are 100% based on what we know, our projections of talents and experience and all that kind of stuff. And then as the season goes on, it kind of shifts from pure projection to, you know, who's got the best results, who's got the best resume. But I think if you don't, you know, if you go into the season without, I guess, ranking the teams or having everybody lined up a certain way, how do you know which victories are impressive or not? I mean, if you look at the RPI right now, I think, you know, there's two Ivy League teams in the top six, and I'm pretty sure we all know that, you know, the Ivy League is not going to have a couple of top 10 RPI teams. They're not going to be in the top 100 at the end of the season. But we know that because, you know, you can look at a roster and you can kind of determine what kind of talent it has. So right. I just think it's a balancing act, and a lot of times fans say, well, you know, my team is 10-0. How come we're not number one? Well, because you haven't beaten as many good teams, and because the other teams that are in front of you that have also played pretty well and haven't, you know, deserved to move down yet.
Yeah, and there's 296 Division I baseball teams, I think, or at least that was the 296 baseball teams on the RPI list that I looked at today. And you talked about two Ivy League teams being in the top 10. There's also one at the very bottom in Harvard on the RPI that I just randomly looked up today a few minutes ago. So to your point, things are still kind of shaking out. Again, I'm with Aaron Fitt here from Baseball America. When do RPI rankings start to really kind of take effect? I know in football you talk about, you know, four or five or six games or something like that sometimes. In baseball, are we looking at like 15 to 20 games and then you can really start to put more stock into like an RPI?
You know, I really don't even look at it usually until about midway through the season. And when we get the halfway point, you know, 6-7 weeks into the year, you know, you can start taking a glance at it. But even then, it can be pretty fluid.
Sure.
Certainly early in the season, I think it's completely worthless because we just, you know, there's just not enough information yet. There's not enough sample size. And, you know, these teams that go on the road and, right. you know, the wins are weighed more heavily. So you go on the road for a couple of weeks and you actually get to a pretty good start, you'll have a great RPI. But, you know, until you get into conference play, it's really hard to know how that stuff you know, will impact things.
Right, right. Great. I have a question about West Coast schools, too, because I know I talked with Larry Lee, actually, before last season, and he talked about the difficulty of kind of getting games against schools from east of the Rockies when you're on the West Coast and when you're not a Pac-12 school, when you're not like a BCS school. He told stories about, you know, calling every single, you know, SEC or ACC team and not getting like a single even like a callback or anything. And the difficulty of kind of raising your end of season RPI based on not being able to do that. Now, to their credit and to your credit too, you were crediting, I think was it LSU or Mississippi State for coming east or for coming west, excuse me, some of those SEC schools. North Carolina State was scheduled to play at Santa Barbara in the first week that got canceled because of the weather. But what do you make as far, you know, is there a lot of incentive for those schools that are in the SEC or the ACC to come out west and play a UC Santa Barbara or a Cal Poly, a team that's not Cal State Fullerton from the Big West?
We see it now and then, and you're right. It is hard for those Big West, those kind of mid-major programs, if you will, you know, to get teams to leave home. And it's like that anywhere in any part of the country. You know, I think Louisiana right. Lafayette this weekend hosted Alabama, and I believe it was the first time they ever hosted a series against an SEC team. You know, and they're right there in SEC country.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's just. You just don't see those teams leave home too often in the non-conference part of the schedule, probably because they can make money if they're at home. I mean, you know, if you're packing 8,000 people into your ballpark,
right.
it's a revenue sport for a lot of those programs. So I like when you see teams go west and you know, we saw Texas A&M this past weekend went to play Fresno State for three games. So, you know, we've seen certainly Vanderbilt has gone out there before and played, you know, San Diego and Fullerton and, Long Beach State. I mean, there's, you know, there's some other,
sure.
some other programs that have been willing to do that. I mean, even a few years ago, even North Carolina went out there for a early season tournament, but it was at Fullerton and USC. So like you said, it's not necessarily the mid-major type programs, but, you know, I think the coaches realize that there's a lot of value now by, to travel the country and you know, just toughen your team up for the conference schedule. And also, from an RPI standpoint, I mean, I think we saw recently there have been some power conference teams that have been left out of regionals because the committee didn't like their non-conference schedule. And they punished LSU a few years ago because they never left home in the pre-conference and didn't play a lot of strong opponents in that part of the season. So I think we're seeing a few more teams make concerted efforts to do that. But but it is always going to be tougher for Cal Poly, especially since when they're located in California, it's, you know, it's not really that close to LAX or you know, San Francisco or the major airports out there. It's harder to get to, more expensive. And their biggest disadvantage there is getting midweek competition, of course. I mean, it's remote a little bit. So that, you know, that makes it hard. It does make it harder to build a good RPI. I mean, he's absolutely right.
Well, and I mean, I was just thinking about it. And you're based out of North Carolina, is that right?
I am, yeah. Okay. I was actually based out of Orange County in California the last 3 years.
Yeah, okay.
Just moved back here in October.
Okay, so, like, I mean, there's what I'm picturing, four, maybe five conferences west of the Rockies when you kind of add it all up, you know, total, including the Pac-12, I'm thinking, unless I'm leaving out a whole conference. And just in, like, North Carolina alone, to kind of contextualize it, how many, I mean, there's a ton of college baseball in that state, right? And
yeah.
I mean, what are we talking as far as numbers of conferences that teams, you know, for teams that just play in that state?
Well, sure, you've got the ACC, you've uh-huh. got the Southern Conference, you've got the CAA, you've got Conference USA, you've got Campbell's in the Big South. You know, I think those are the main ones there. I think there's probably about five, but, you know, North Carolina's got, I think, 18 or 19 Division I programs. It's approximately as many as there are in California. It's pretty close.
Right.
And California's, of course, got a lot more people. So,
sure.
It just shows you. You know, that's one reason why the West, I feel like, there's a kind of a proportional representation here in the postseason. I think a lot of people in the West think that they get the raw deal every year, but there's just less teams out there than there are in the East. I mean, that's just a fact.
Right. And that's kind of the point. I mean, even South Carolina's right there. I mean, you're in neighboring states. You know, if you count neighboring states, you probably have even a lot more of just kind of total conferences and total teams. And so it's always an interesting thing that I try to kind of contextualize before I get kind of in a tizzy about it, I guess. Coming kind of back to the Big West, has Cal Poly, I know in your early season predictions, I listened to your week one and week two podcast that you guys do on Baseball America. They're really good and really informative, and they're posted most weeks, I think. I don't know if there's one this week, you mentioned Cal Poly as a team in that, you know, preseason podcast that was out of the top 25, but just barely. They crept into the top 25 after sweeping Kansas State. They moved up big after beating UCLA in the series, and now ranked 11th in your rankings. Have they been a surprise to you? And if so, why?
The only thing that really surprised me has been how good they've been in the rotation after Matt Imhoff, who we knew was really good. That was my question mark with Cal Poly entering the season, was how good were Slater Lee and Casey Bloomquist going to be? Because I just didn't know. That's the only reason they weren't ranked, because I love everything else about their team. I love the offensive upside, the athleticism, the experience, and the defensive ability up the middle. I think you've got star power out there with Nick Torres and, certainly Brian Mundell. Guys that have real power. It's a multifaceted offense that can beat you a lot of ways. I like the bullpen. I'm a huge Lee Riley fan. And they've got Taylor Chris, of course. I mean, they've got some nice supporting pieces in the bullpen out there. And the one question that I had was about the starting pitching, and so far it's been answered to my satisfaction and then some. I think those guys have done a really good job. So credit the coaching staff certainly for putting in their players in a position to succeed and recognizing what they had and a true freshman like Slater Lee, who came in there, without as much fanfare, I'd say, as some other freshmen, even in the conference. I mean, you look at, Phil Bickford down there, those kind of guys. I mean, he wasn't in that kind of category, but, he's comes from the same high school, I believe, as Thomas Eshelman at Carlsbad High, and he's kind of the same style, very, very confident strike thrower that can mix speeds and locations, and he's proven that he's ready for D1, that's for sure.
Yeah, definitely, and I think that's, I definitely agree with you as far as looking at this season. To have a true freshman be your Saturday starter on a team that, probably one of their big holes last year was just, rotation depth beyond Wagman and Imhoff. It was kind of, you weren't really sure what you were going to get, on how to get you to Riley or to start on Sundays. And I think in the regional that I know you were down at, it seemed like once they got past those two guys, it was kind of, I don't want to say up for grabs, but things were a lot less sure, and batters started pressing in that direction. Being down at that regional last year, how much did that kind of change your view of Cal Poly in terms of Larry Lee and his and how he coaches and the team and how they play?
I think it kind of reinforced my feeling that they got a great program. And it's funny, when you talk to people in the West Coast about Cal Poly, it's almost universal praise. We hear it from scouts all the time. We hear it from other coaches. People think it just has so much respect for that coaching staff and the job they do. And, it's a program that the people have always kind of recognized out there and expected it to take that next step. And it's taken a little while for them because, I think a big reason is because of the RPI challenge we talked about before. But right now they've got it going. And I saw them in their season last year, and I think I picked them to win that regional actually heading into the weekend at UCLA. And, it looked pretty good at one point there. They won the first game. I think they were up, 5 or 6-0 against UCLA in the second game. And then everything just kind of fell apart very abruptly. But if they win that second game, then they're sitting pretty. So maybe there is no UCLA national championship. It's a program that, I think has done a good job from a talent standpoint. And certainly, those teams are always going to be pretty fundamentally sound. And I actually like their team even more this year because I just think that, they're I expect them to be more consistent offensively this year and defensively. I know sometimes there were moments last year where Coach Lee was not entirely satisfied with either of those things. And you know, I feel like the added experience that they have now and just the personnel that they have, I expect them to be an airtight defensive team.
Yeah, absolutely. Being from San Luis Obispo County originally myself, and it sounds like are you from Southern California originally or wherever you're from? What's the kind of the national perception? I mean, San Luis Obispo, like you said, it's kind of a tough place to get to. Not a lot of people have like a great picture for it. What's kind of the perception from your end as somebody who spent some time in Southern California of just the area, and does that help or hurt them, you think, in terms of like recruiting and everything else?
Well, I think the fact that it's a beautiful, beautiful area. You know, as you know, if you've lived there your whole life, why would you ever leave, right? I mean, it's gorgeous.
I left and came back, yeah.
You did, okay. Yeah. Well, that's probably a smart move. Yeah. I actually grew up in Massachusetts, and I won't ever be moving back up there. So, well, I've had enough of the snow for one lifetime. But, you know, it's absolutely a great spot. You know, same with this bone. And I just think that there's a lot to be said for it. I mean, I know that.
Hey, Aaron, are you still there?
Excuse me?
Sorry, yeah, it's kind of like digitizing out a little bit. Are you there still?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, that's way better. Awesome. Sorry.
You want to just keep going here?
I mean, yeah, just keep going. Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think the one disadvantage that they have from a recruiting standpoint is that there isn't that natural recruiting base right in their backyard, you know, right. Like you have mm-hmm. if you're in Orange County or San Diego or Los Angeles or even, you know, farther up in the Bay Area, you're kind of stuck in between there, you know, in SLO. So I just think that, I guess it's a little bit of a challenge maybe sometimes to get some of those players to leave their areas where they're really comfortable. But I just think you have a lot of selling points out there too. So I don't know. I mean, I'd love to play there. You know, I'll put it that way. And I know that a lot of college players around the country love to go play for the Blues in the summertime because it's a great spot. So, you know, that helps as well.
Awesome. Again, I'm with Aaron Fitt here. Is Slater Lee maybe the single most important kind of piece to that kind of the unknown for Cal Poly this year? Maybe the difference between making and contending in a regional or maybe kind of potentially falling off in conference play? Is he really kind of the key? Is our Saturdays like super important for that team?
I think that's fair to say. Sure. I mean, you know, especially as a freshman, you know, sometimes you see freshman pitchers wear down the stretch. So that'll be something to monitor. Will he be able to maintain this thing throughout the year? And, you know, they need him to do it because you can't win a regional with one pitcher, certainly, or even two. You know, you need some depth. And the number two guy is a pretty important piece. So he's been one of the bigger surprises for me in the country right now as a freshman. And just a guy that, you know, wasn't as much on the national radar, and he's quickly established himself.
Great. The top six teams in the Big West, I saw a number stat today. Somebody posted, and I didn't. It could be false. I'm just putting it out there now. But I think that the top six Big West schools are 13-3 so far versus Pac-12 schools. That includes Cal Poly and Fullerton, Santa Barbara, Irvine, Riverside, and Long Beach. How does that impact the conference kind of going if the Pac-12 is kind of the highest level of competition that you can play in preseason and they're going out and doing it and winning? Does that mean that there's a potential if four schools, you know, kind of finish above the rest in the conference that, you know, that I mean, I know getting three schools into a regional has been kind of a big deal in the past. But when you have kind of that kind of top end record against Pac-12 schools, does that start to make the conversation be something more like potentially four, depending on how the rest of this preseason goes?
Yeah, I think that's a great point. You know, I think the fact that they've been able to get off to such a strong start, especially against the pack, boy, that helps a lot. You know, and I feel like you've got, you know, four or five regional caliber teams in this league, certainly with Fullerton, Poly, Santa Barbara, maybe Irvine in the mix. I still think Long Beach is going to be better than it has been so far. I kind of like Riverside's team. I think they're pretty offensive. I think they're a little bit sneaky. So, all those teams, I think, could compete for a regional. And I really feel strongly about Fullerton, Pauley, and Santa Barbara. I think those are three pretty clear regional teams, and I expect all of them to end up getting bids. But I do think this year, there's a chance for this league to get a fourth bid, which it has done before, but it's been a while. So I think we could see that.
Yeah, awesome. That's I know that's music to Big West fans' ears here. Last question. In listening to your podcasts, you guys describe teams as being physical, and you talk about physicality of teams. Does that mean, is that like big, strong guys who can hit home runs at any time, who you're not surprised by, or can you kind of go into that a little bit more? I know it's a word that you guys have used a number of times to describe the Cal Poly lineup, and just kind of wanted to expand on that a little bit more. I know, when you talk about Torres and Mundell and even, Jimmy Allen at times and some other guys, you kind of talk about being physical.
You're right, and that's the word we probably use too often. Now that you mentioned it, I think I probably
I like it. No. I ask it because I haven't heard it used to describe baseball players as much, and I kind of enjoy using it. I just want to make sure that I'm using it in the right way.
Yeah, well, it's part of it is, you're right, having the strength to hit home runs. I mean, teams that can drive the ball out of the park in this era of college baseball with these bats, they stand out. That's a separator. If you've got the physical strength to do that. But it's not just home runs. I think it's, being able to drive the gaps. I think of a guy like Jordan Ellis or Jimmy Allen, these guys aren't necessarily home run hitters. They're still pretty physical players. And you think of a team like UCLA, they're just not very physical offensively. I mean, they've got a few guys that have some strength, but they're just, they're kind of a singles hitting team. And so for me, if you got the strength to drive the gaps, and hit home runs, I think that really stands out in college baseball right now. And so, I think if Cal Poly is one of the more physical teams on the West Coast, I think Fullerton has a little bit of that in the middle of the lineup with Matt Chapman and J.D. Davis and Greg Velasquez, a senior. You typically see these teams that have older players. Obviously, you grow a lot physically from age 18 to age 21 or 22. So, teams that have upperclassmen in the lineup do tend to be more physical. But sometimes they're freshmen like Mundell last year, who really stood out physically as a freshman. That's not necessarily the case across the board. Right. But, I do think that if you look on the West Coast, I mean, I think a few years ago, Stanford really stood out because of their physicality. They had a lot of really large men on their team, mm-hmm. and they didn't play kind of a typical West Coast style. They were kind of a grip it and rip it kind of team. And so you don't see that a whole lot out west. And I don't really classify Cal Poly as that kind of style. I mean, they can beat you a lot of different ways, but they do have that power element that I think is pretty special.
Great. And last question. I know I said last question last time, but this really is. You have a guy like Brian Mundell who had Tommy John surgery last year. He's supposed to be a catcher, and obviously we've never seen him catch at the college level, really. Is he or Torres or Imhoff or who would you think is kind of the top rated? I mean, obviously they're in different classes, right? Between Mundell and Torres and Imhoff, but who in your mind on this team is kind of would you rate kind of at the top as far as being a prospect for the majors? I mean, we've seen guys like Haniger, Logan Schaefer go, yeah. and Haniger's getting some looks right now in spring training. I read an article about that the other day. And then last year you had Wagman and among others who were drafted into the bigs. You have Bud Norris with the Orioles. Who on this year's roster are you thinking, because this is part of what you do too. You talk about high school, but then
right.
Thinking about guys who can be successful at the next level. Who do you see on this Cal Poly team?
Yeah, you mentioned some names there. Historically with this program, they have, I hate to keep going back to this, but they have had those physical guys come out of there. Grant Desmay is another one.
Yeah.
They've got the history of producing these pretty strong offensive players. But I think this year the best prospect on the team for me is Imhoff. I mean, I just think that a left-hander with size works downhill. I think he'll touch you 93 or 94. He's got He's got a couple of really good secondary pitches. He's got feel for pitching. I mean, I think he's the whole package. I think he's probably somebody that you'll see go in the top two rounds. You know, maybe sandwich pick, maybe sneak in the back of the first round if he has a really good year. You know, I think he's really good. And then Torres, he's the other guy that stands out. I know a lot of people, scouts, who really like him because he's got kind of a prototype left-field tool set. You know, maybe you know, we need to see the power really develop. Usually that's the last tool that comes, but he's already flashed some of that. He's hit for some home runs in his career, and I think he's going to hit a lot more as he continues to mature. But, you know, he can throw. He's got a very strong arm out there. He can run a little bit. He's got a good approach. So I think he profiles well, and I think he's got a chance to be a three to five round kind of pick. So, you know, Mundell, certainly with his power, that's a tough tool to find. He'll be a prospect for next year as well. But and he's got off to a great start with the bat. You know, I think we wanted to see his approach take a step forward. We wanted to see him cut down the strikeouts, make more consistent contact, and so far so good. If he can maintain that, then he could go pretty good for the draft next year too. So too early to tell yet. I think a lot of scouts still want to see him maintain that performance, but the power is like I said, it's legitimate. So he's definitely a prospect, no doubt about it.
Just great stuff. Aaron Fitt from Baseball America. You can find Aaron on Twitter at Aaron Fitt. That's two A's at the beginning and two T's at the end. He's a writer. You can check out college baseball podcast that they do on Baseball America site, and also his chats where he answers fan questions as well. Aaron, I really appreciate it, and maybe we'll be able to do it again sometime if and when Cal Poly gets to a regional this year.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed talking with you, and I'm happy to join you again.
Hey, thanks for listening to the Fansmanship Podcast. For more podcasts and more in-depth sports discussion, go to fansmanship.com.
Well, I've been stuck on down in Trouble Town. It's a lonely place, it's true. Street lights so bright, they blind my vision. And the people on the streets, they beat me up till I'm black and blue. You lift me up, don't bring me down. You give your love to everyone around. You send me on my way to Trouble Town. Love can't find my way around Trouble Town. Front page of the news. Keep trying to find my way back home, but the signs out on the streets direct me running back.